Ben Jaworski, what's going on?
John Woolley, it has been far too long, brother. It's good to see you.
Welcome to the Kettlebells and Cocktails channel. We've just ported you over just like that. Before we even get started, I'm going to tell everybody, those that are listening to this, go over to YouTube, subscribe to us on the Kettlebells and Cocktails. So that's where you're going to find this, the video channel, this, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And that's yep. where we'll be moving forward. So welcome.
Yeah, and basically my understanding is we talked about this a little bit, John, for everyone else listening in. What this is going to be is a segment on the Kettlebells and Cocktails podcast. So rather than trying to grow two simultaneous podcast channels and keep up with the metrics and all kinds of chaos there, this is just going to be an ongoing segment that, you know, we won't have to record on a weekly basis, because with my schedule and John's schedule, it can be very difficult to do that. However, we are going to commit to a regular segment so that people can get their scale and bail fix.
Yeah, I think it'll be better too. I was thinking about it today, because we'll talk some on the show about it tonight, that it'll allow us to do some show clips. So like we routinely will give like three tips to do XYZ, whatever it may be. And so we can clip those out and put those into show clips. And so now people can go back and just get their tips for double unders, handstand pushups, running, whatever, as opposed to having to go back and like figure out what episode it came from and all of that. So it should be a win for everyone. I hope. We'll see how it goes, but
I'm excited.
I'm glad to be back. Glad for us to be chatting. What's up with that bear behind you?
So I'm in my new house. Since the last podcast, I have moved to a place called Louisville, Colorado. And the first order of business was that I put this guy on the wall.
Wow, so
this is a
guy.
Bear that I hunted in Canada. I have been eating said bear for a while and finally got the bear rug back. And the thing with bear rugs is you don't hang them on the wall, or excuse me, you don't put them on the ground as an actual rug because they'll get destroyed. So it's hanging. And basically when you first walk up the stairs into my house, it basically the bear face is aggressively staring you in the face. I just like to set the tone right. When anyone comes over. And then I have the one horned animal I've ever harvested hanging on the wall over there. It's my deer head. Here, show you.
Just show me.
Interactive podcast here.
Yeah, just show. Just walk around.
I have my...
Oh, look at that.
It's so tiny. It's a little baby, but... Or it's not really not a baby. He was very mature, but that is a 7-point buck euro nice. Mount. Anyway.
You saving a space for elk season somewhere on the
wall? Yes, ideally, we have I have a big space over here right when people walk into the house. I'm hoping to have an elk so big that people actually have to walk around it just to get into the house. That's the goal.
Dude, I was at Tom's house the other night. We were doing a workshop thing for our coaches at the gym. And, dude, the elk on his wall is intense. It is so big. It's crazy. Like, it's really, like, I can see why you would be geeked out in the woods if you saw one in person, because those things are monstrously big.
It's unbelievable. And as we record this podcast, I'm sure it's going to be released. I will be in the woods. I will be living in the woods for essentially the entire month of September. And this will be my third season. Is that correct? I think this is going to be my third season, and hopefully third time's the charm.
Well, will it actually be the entire, like, you get one tag, right?
Yes, I'll have one elk tag for archery season, and basically that's just the month of September. So I'm fortunate enough to have a great team at Wad Prep. They know how much I need my time in the woods, so I will basically be off grid for the entire month.
So what happens if you get one in the first week? Are you done, or do you just stay out there with whoever you're traveling with?
Yeah, so I'm going to be hunting with two of my best friends, Gary and JT, and the chances of us all filling our tags within the first week, I'd say, is quite possibly the closest thing that could get to zero. So it's not that I don't have faith, but it's just the statistics are very difficult. So I will probably be in the woods the whole month, regardless of whether I fill my tag, because I'll, even if, let's say, I do fill my tag and harvest an elk, then we need to get two more for them. So
are you doing anything special to prepare yourself physically for the month in the woods? You bulking up, you doing extra workouts? Like, what are you doing?
I'm not actually. The cool thing about it is one of the best elk hunters probably in the world runs a podcast that I've been on a few times, and he has a page called Elk Shape. His name is Dan Staton. He's an elk hunter. That's all he does. Literally all he does is elk hunt and then prepare people to elk hunt. And he was a former CrossFit gym owner, games athlete, stuff like that. So we bonded over that. But I essentially just follow his lead. He does CrossFit to get ready for elk season. And that's what I do. So I've been hitting Coda CrossFit, the local gym here. That's my favorite gym that I've been to in a very, very long time. And I've been training there pretty consistently. Since the last time we had a podcast, I PR'd my one rep max on everything.
Oh, nice.
Snatch, clean and jerk, strict press, back squat, front squat, absolutely everything I PR'd. And I'm feeling fitter than really ever. So I think I'm really prepared for the woods.
Last year, you lost a bunch of weight when you did this. You worried about that at all this time?
It's inevitable. It's like almost physically impossible with the amount of hiking and like you have to be moving all day. It's almost impossible to eat enough calories to not lose weight. So I'll come back from the woods fairly shredded. I will lose a lot of fat, even though I'm going to be eating probably 3,500 calories a day, like force feeding myself to eat it. I'm still going to lose a lot of weight.
It does a lot of walking, right?
Like lots of walking. I did 315 miles with a backpack on, which has, I'd say it's probably about 20 pounds, the ruck that I'm carrying along with my bow. And I did 315 miles in the season last year. Hopefully we don't have to do quite as many miles this year, but there's a lot of hiking, lots of calorie burning, lots of sleep deprivation, but it's all worth it.
Yeah, it's a lot of elevation miles too, right? Like hills. Yeah.
Essentially, those 315 miles are hiking up and down mountains. Essentially. Yeah.
That's fun. And you just got back from the tactical games. You competed finally, got back into a competition.
I did. I have officially unretired.
How'd you do?
Coming back like Jordan, except didn't quite pull off the Jordan win a championship when he comes back.
Well, he didn't in his first year, right? When he came back, he didn't initially. When he came, it was like he played like a shorter season or something.
True, which means I'll obviously win the next tactical
game. Yeah, of course. But,
So my girlfriend and I, she competed in a tactical games in Iowa a little over a month ago. And she just said how fun it was. She's like, that was one of the funnest events I've ever done, even though I wasn't very good at it. There's a team event in August in West Virginia. Should we do it? And I'm like, duh. So we did it. And it was so much fun. And even though the fitness component of it, it's kind of like CrossFit mixed with target shooting, right? So it's elevating your heart rate, doing CrossFit, and then shooting firearms at targets at varying distances and stuff like that. So I will put it this way. Most of the times back when I competed, I think the last like four or five competitions that I was in, I either got first or second. I think I won every single one of them except for one. And that's because I'm really good at lifting heavy weights and doing high level gymnastic skills. And most CrossFit competitions, just because they're fun, they have combinations of those two. So I tend to, I'd say, overperform at local competitions because they tend to have those skill elements and or a heavy barbell. And those are both my jam, so to speak. The tactical games is not CrossFit. It kind of is, but all of the work is low skill grunt work. It's all carrying heavy sandbags, burpees with a ruck on. I did a couple mile trail run with 70 pounds on my back. I am not good at any of that. So I didn't do well in the fitness part as compared to how I normally view my fitness. Like normally, the fitness will be easy. But all of these things were so far out of my wheelhouse. And then of course, since I was in the elite division, the shooting, I think the top six teams had basically professional shooters or people who shoot nearly full, like that's what they do is shoot. Right. And I'll put it this way, I did not do particularly well on that. So we had a great time. We did not come in last, which is good. We did come in second to last, but that's okay. Still top 10, ninth. It was a great time. And there was a few CrossFit. There was a games athlete, Christine Kohlenbrander, yeah. Jared Whalen Stevens's wife. They were a husband and wife duo. And I think they were one place ahead of us. We had
Oh, nice.
But it was a great time. Truly something that is going, makes me want to get good at grunt work now. Normally, all the training and all the cardio stuff and all the grunt work that we do, I just don't like it. So when you bring that attitude into training, you probably aren't going to get that much better at it. But now that I've seen that, like, hey, if I want to get good at tactical games, not only do I need to work on shooting, obviously, but I just need to incrementally improve my grunt work skills and I'll be pretty solid. So now I have that motivation to go to COTA. And when we're doing the sandbag holds and the sandbag cleans and the carries and the farmer's carries and the rope climbs and things like that, it's like, these are all things I want to get better at now in order to improve my performance in the tactical games.
Yeah, stuff's sneaky hard, dude. I did one yesterday. So I was talking to Jacob Heppner. We chat every once in a while. And right now we're chatting because there's a Star Wars series that was released today and he's a big nerd. And so am I. And so we were messaging back and forth. And I'm like, hey, buddy, I did one of your workouts this week. A friend of mine sent it to me. And to your point around grunt work, it was a 10-minute EMOM. At the top of the minute, you do 13 or 18 calories on the ski erg. At the bottom of the minute, or the second minute, alternate minute, you do sandbag over a yoke. And so for the men, it was 53 inches. So I did it in my basement. So basically, I just took a barbell and banded it to the rig and used that, just measured it and used it. And dude, that is sneaky hard. Like, it doesn't look it. You're like, all right, it's just ski erg and sandbag. Like, how hard could it be? And the problem is you get into the sandbag. I always call them sandbag tosses because you're basically just picking it up and putting it over the bar, just dropping it over the bar, right? So it's kind of like a clean, but it's not a clean.
Yep.
And in a minute, I was getting 5 every minute, which I thought was okay. But by the time you get to the fifth one, like, I was in round 3 and all of a sudden my legs didn't work anymore. I'm like, what is going on right now?
Yep.
My heart rate wasn't high. Like, we'll talk about heart rate on this episode, but I have a pretty low resting heart rate as it is, usually around 50 beats per minute. And if I'm up in that like 155, 160, I'm in zone 5. Like, I'm peaking.
Burning.
You know?
Yeah.
I was nowhere near that. I never left zone 3. I was in that like 123 to 135 range the entire way. But man, legs just gave out. Like, I just remember getting like that fourth one and like trying to pick it up and having to sit there in that kind of modified squat for a minute before I could get it up to my shoulder.
Yep.
And it starts to jack up your lower back and your hamstrings are screaming. And
yep. That was one of the workouts this past weekend at Tactical Games was a 2-minute AMRAP 150-pound sandbag over yoke. And you can't really see it, but like, I have all these like little cuts and bruises, and my hands were bleeding so much because it's not like these events are happening at a CrossFit gym where it's all clean and pretty and stuff. We're doing it in the dirt. Yeah. So there was like this big rock that every single time I'd scoop the bag and get my hands under it, I'd smash into this big rock that's like pointy. And it's just pure. It's how much can you just hurt? That's all it is. It's like, who's willing to hurt more? And I need to learn how to hurt more. But that kind of stuff is very sneaky. And there's, just like all the other skills in CrossFit, like, there is skill, there's technique involved. And I was a bit frustrated with myself that it's like, man, I haven't done that much in the way of sandbags. Like, I didn't start picking up sandbags until probably this year, just because COTA CrossFit programs them from time to time. And if we look even at the CrossFit Games this year, there was only a barbell in 2 events. There was grunt work. The whole, like, there was so much sandbag, like jumping over obstacles or high boxes. Like, there was a lot of this grunt work, but it still has a level of skill that you need to be proficient in. And it's, if you're not prepared for it, you can't just say, oh, I'm good at doing cleans, I'll be fine at a sandbag over yoke. Like, nah, not really. Like, you need to practice sandbags over yoke to get good at it.
Yeah, there's a lot of translation there. I was watching an interview with Jason Calipo. We actually had him on Kettlebells and Cocktails a week or so ago, but I was watching him on a different show and people were complaining that there weren't enough strength elements at the games. He's like, are you kidding me? He's like, did you see the sandbag? He's like, yeah, that's not a barbell. He's like, but it absolutely translates.
Yeah.
But to your point, it's also a high skill. Like, it's a much different skill than doing a deadlift or a clean or a snatch. And it can wreck you. It can absolutely wreck you. I like the grunt work. Like, I do it almost every Sunday. So I'm considering taking up tactical games as an actual opportunity for me to compete.
It's so much fun and similar to CrossFit, but maybe even more so. Like, the environment is so welcoming and so fun, and it's just more chill, which you kind of don't think when there's firearms involved and, you know, you're shooting. And but it's just, everybody was just so helpful. They obviously knew that my partner and I weren't very experienced, so they were helping out, helping us get prepared for events. There's tons and tons of strategy involved with regard to, do I try to win the workout portion of the workout, or do I, for lack of a better term, sandbag that a little bit so that my heart rate isn't as high so that I can be accurate in the shooting?
Right.
Depending on how the workout is written and how it's scored, there are different rules for each one. So it's just, it's a tricky, tricky event. And it's also something that I loved, and I'm definitely going to be doing more of. And I'm trying to convince more people to do it. Like, all my friends here, I'm like, guys, if there's one anywhere near Colorado, we have to road trip and do it, because it is so much fun. And it's just a unique take on these fitness events, because we kind of all done CrossFit. We're kind of washed up ex-athletes, and like, right. I don't really care to try to see who's the best at high volume ring muscle ups with handstand walks. And I love that, don't get me wrong, but like, my competitive days are over there. But all of a sudden you start involving shooting targets and doing that with competition, and it's like, that's kind of interesting. So it's going to be fun, and I highly recommend. I think you were interested in maybe doing the one in Georgia. I think you would love it.
Well, I'm going to that one. I'm going to go observe that one. Okay. I mean, like, here's my problem. I got 13 guitars behind me. I already got a hobby that's stupid expensive. So taking on another hobby that requires buying a lot of stuff, because I'd have to buy virtually all of it, at least to compete, is a big pain. The good news is I got plenty of places to train. So like, it, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal to get the training in. And there's a few ranges around here, so I could certainly get it in. But
I have a feeling that people in your network would be able to ship you loaner things. Like, you can borrow my weight vest and use that.
Yeah. I mean, when I get into something, dude, I go all in. It's the ADHD in me.
Me and you both, buddy. Yeah.
So I'm not worried about spending the money. It's just like, do I want to invest the time on top of everything else that I have going on in my life? So there's a possibility. I'm going to go observe and see it. It looks fun.
Observe it. I have a feeling you're going to be like, wow, this is cool.
You know, funny enough, I wanted to talk a little bit about heart rate from that. I mean, you brought it up about, you know, you got to keep your heart rate down to shoot. And I had a question that came in today about zone two training. And they specifically asked about rucking. Is rucking a good path to zone two? Is it worth it? Do you have any, I mean, you're about to do an entire month of rucking. Do you view that as zone two or no?
So admittedly, as a coach, I'm very much like a skill coach, right? I can help people learn skills. In terms of the methodologies of training zone two, three, four, yada, 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 I am not the person to ask. However, I do have a little bit of expertise on that. If you remember, we interviewed Michael Easter from The Comfort Crisis.
Yep.
In his book, he talks about, in The Comfort Crisis, he talks all about the scientific benefits of rucking and how it's one of the very few things that you can do that will get you that zone two training, but also strength training at the same time. So, and it's also relatively low impact. Like, you're not, as long as you're not running with it, it's low impact, low injury, high bang for your buck, so to speak, training wise. So short answer, yes, it could be a great tool to get that zone two time, but not necessarily have to run or use any equipment. It's literally like you put weight in the backpack and go for a hike uphill. And it's a really, really easy way to get some great training in.
Do you incorporate any zone two into your training or no?
It is incorporated into the second sessions that my gym programs for the competitor workouts. I only go in for the one afternoon session. So no, I'm not really doing too much zone two training, other than I bike my dogs almost every single day for a few miles. So that's probably zone two training, just biking them around. But I don't specifically in my training, but if I was trying to compete at a higher level, if I was really trying to get good at fitness, which is not necessarily something that I am still trying to do. I just go to the competitor class for fun, and I'm happy to get better. I'm getting better at fitness on the way. if I was trying to compete at a high level and really increase that engine, then yes, I'd be doing a lot more.
I know some people listening are going to wonder, like, what is zone two? So there's a formula for this to get it. And there's multiple formulas. The one that I use is like the simplest formula of all, which is you take 220 and you subtract your age. And so if you're 30 years old, as an example, which I am not, obviously, but if you're 30 years old, that would give you your maximum heart rate. So basically they're saying 220 minus your age is your maximum heart rate. So if you're 30, that means it'd be 190, right? And then you take 70 to 80% of that 190 and it gives you where your zone two heart rate would be. Mm-hmm. So this would work, theoretically works in any age group. So I could take that 220 minus 53, multiply it back by 70 to 80%, and that'll give me my max heart rate for zone two and give me a sense of where I should be. So if you're trying to figure out your zone two, that's the easiest way to do it. You can Google it. There's three or four methods, but kind of two that are at least that I'm super familiar with, but this is the one that I use and it seems to be pretty accurate for me, for whatever that's worth. I'm zone tuning probably twice a week now at this point. And I'm finding it super beneficial for two reasons. I think one, it is giving me a very, very consistent heart rate. I think that's partly why when I did that workout we described a little bit ago, why I'm able to keep my heart rate down as low as it is and continue to work. Now, it still sucks. Like 135 to 145 is not a crazy low heart rate. So it's still, you're still putting in work, but it's not 150 or 160. And then the second one is like these zone two for me are like a minimum of 40 minutes, 40 to 60 minutes. I prefer to go as far out as 60, but you know, 40 is kind of the minimum. And when you do a 40 minute workout, these little 10 minute workouts are super manageable, at least mentally. Like I was 3 rounds in and I mentioned like how my legs were failing, but I'm looking at the clock going, I got 4 more minutes. That's it. I only got to work for 4 more minutes. And I found that to be probably one of the biggest advantages in workouts for me lately, particularly as we're doing Superhero Summer at my gym. So we do a hero wad every single Friday. And those are typically 30-ish minutes, and they're really hard, like really hard workouts. We did Zeus last week, and even 30 minutes seems really manageable, even when you're in like kind of your hardest state, whether lifting or just high heart rate or whatever it is. So,
yeah, and that's something that I think most CrossFit gyms as a whole, preparing people for GPP, general physical preparedness, there's a lot of times where we're skewed to those short 8 to 15 minute workouts, and they're great. And we get a ton of benefit. Like the amount of benefit you get from a high intensity workout at 15 minutes long. It's amazing how much you can get out of that short time span, but there definitely is something to be said for actually dedicating time, whether it's your own time or gyms that specifically program it. The issue is most people skip those days. When they see,
right,
hey, we're running at zone two for 40 minutes. Like, nope, right? I'm not going. But it's extremely beneficial. And I mean, essentially all of September, I will be in zone two the whole time. I will be just hiking and hiking and hiking. And my heart rate, I'm sure, will be fluctuating a lot, but it'll be hovering around that like 160 for me. And it's amazing the engine that you can build with that low impact, long duration workout.
Well, it's funny you word it that way, because I want to talk about building an engine. Before we do that, let's mention our sponsor, ThirdZ. Are you taking them in the woods with you? You taking a bag?
No, because what? Yeah, because every ounce matters. And basically that is an ounce that is not dedicated to gear that will help me find an elk. So basically I cut out everything, which is sad, and I will definitely miss it. There are going to be nights where I really wished I had it, because we'll have like a really intense evening where maybe we get on an elk, and then trying to get my nervous system to calm down and get and like actually let myself fall asleep, it can be tough, especially if there's like bears around camp and stuff like that. It's really hard to fall asleep. Yep. So I'm gonna wish that I had some Thursday for sure.
Well, since I saw you last, I've talked to Jason Grubb, who's a now a four-time games champion in the Masters division. we become friends, and he's a huge proponent of this stuff, loves it, like takes it every night. And that was all it took to convince me to go, yeah, I should probably be more consistent in me taking it, because this dude is fit AF and I am not. So I'm just, he's very fit.
He used to live out, and I know he's on the road now, live out of his RV full time, but he used to live out here in Colorado. So we've linked up a few times, and he's a classic example of like what CrossFit can do, because it's amazing watching him. Like, you know, at my age, he like was not fit. Like he was,
right.
And I've seen pictures of him with a light beer in his hand. He's chubby. And now you look at him, you're like, are you serious?
Yeah.
He's just an absolute freak of nature.
Well, I was grilling him on it. He's like, sleep, man. I'm like, I get a lot of sleep. I'm like, all right, well, I'll be more committed, I guess. So,
yeah, I mean, sleep is, I've always been a huge proponent of that. And I've, now that I have this new house, it's like I have obsessed over every detail of my sleep environment, because that to me is the most important aspect of my day for mental health and also for fitness. Because if you're not sleeping well, everything you do in the gym is, the benefits of that gym time are drastically reduced if you're not actually sleeping well. But if you're sleeping well, then you get the full benefit of that training because your body has time to recover. I am a big sleep proponent.
Well, if you want to get better sleep, go buy Thirdzy. Go to thirdzy.com, thirdzy.com. We have a new code. It's WODZZ, WODZZZ. And buy some Thirdzy. And we'll get Justine back on to talk about this. She's having twins.
Didn't know it was twins. I knew she was pregnant. I didn't know twins. I saw her at the CrossFit Games, gave her a big hug. She came to the WOD Prep party. But I did not know that it was twins.
Yeah, she told me twins, but you know, unless I misheard. But yeah, I'm very excited for her. So we need to get her on while she's still getting sleep, because that she has twins.
Yeah.
She will not be getting
sleep. She's going to need a lot of Thirdzy.
Yeah, she'll be giving those babies Thirdzy. The only way anybody's sleeping in that house. That's crazy. All right, let's talk about building an engine. Give me your top three tips for building an engine.
So having been through the process of creating, we have a course, obviously, of course we do, called Endless Engine. And I didn't write the programming for that. My head coach did, CJ. The bird's eye view of building an engine is you probably need to add monostructural accessory work to your training.
What's that mean? That means
monostructural being like you're doing one movement, whether it's running, biking, rowing, ski erg, something like that, and doing that at a specific pace for a long period of time. That's very broad brushstroke of how to get a better engine. If we just go to CrossFit gyms and do these 8 to 15 minute metcons with all kinds of different equipment and transitions and stuff like that, you will build an engine. But if you're truly trying to focus on building a cardio engine that's going to make you better in those workouts, you need to take some time outside of the gym, or take some time outside of class and do longer monostructural pieces. We're talking, you know, at least 20, but probably 30 to 60 minute sessions where you're trying to maintain a specific pace. So a lot of times what we do is we have athletes set a pace for their max 2K row time. So the fastest 2K row they can possibly manage. And then we're going to be doing our row pacing off of that benchmark and saying, all right, let's say you can row 2000 meter row at 2 minutes per 500. Okay. In training, we're going to be doing a lot of interval work with 2 minutes, 5 seconds per 500. And you're going to be doing a lot of repeats with that shorter duration. Or maybe you're going to be doing repeats at 155 per 500, where we're upping the intensity and we're doing shorter pieces, not full 2K rows. And then we're going to have longer pieces where we're going for 30, 40 minutes at a much slower pace, but forcing you to hold on to that pace for an extended period of time. And I know with Katie, my girlfriend, she does ultra marathons. She is doing a lot of pace-based runs where she is trying to run at a 9-minute mile pace for 12 miles or something like that. And that's going to help her prepare for her 100-mile races in the future. So those are some very big, broad brushstrokes. But the bottom line for most people listening is that you're probably not doing enough monostructural work outside of the gym. It could be something as simple as having a rower or a bike or something where you can watch TV and do extended sessions, or go into John Blue's basement and hit his skier or hit whatever machines he has down there, and doing single monostructural pieces for longer periods of time with a specific pace in mind.
Yep. It's funny. I was looking at, I had written my top three tips. So we're still on tip one.
Yeah, that was just one big tip.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. Here's my top tip. Swear to God. I literally wrote out, you got to work in longer increments. So mix it up. Bike, run, row, ski. That was my top tip. And I think you're spot on. I think you have to just pick something and just go do it. So like, now you can't go do the CrossFit 5K because it's not going to be long enough. That's the problem. It's not a 5K. But yeah, I like, for me, it's usually the biker because I can sit on that thing for 60 minutes. But if I'm going to row, same thing, like 30 to 40. I don't like the ski erg as much. But what I will do is I have all the machines, right? So I'll do assault runner and ski erg, and I'll run for 2 minutes, ski erg for one, run for two, ski for one. And I'll do that for 60 minutes, just back and forth. And again, it's not like I'm not sprinting, you know, and sometimes I'll even mix it up where I'll go at a light jog for 2 minutes, and then I'll sprint on the ski erg for one, and then light jog for two and sprint for one. And do that for 40 minutes, just enough to keep kind of that long endurance. You should be soaked when you're done, but not so exhausted that you can't go do something else. That makes sense. And that's how I've always viewed it. And I've been doing that now for probably a couple of years in at this point. And I think
probably why you're good at a lot of engine workouts.
Well, yeah, I mean, probably. I mean, it was funny. Someone actually messaged me this morning because I had mentioned on a different show that I really focused on capacity over intensity. And they're like, I don't know what that means. And so this is what I was trying to explain to them. It's like, I don't do a lot of 15 minutes or less. I do them some, and I can go to that red line if I have to. I just hate that feeling. I just absolutely hate it, but I can do it. And my sprinting has never suffered. Like I can still, like when the open comes around or I have to get in a competitive situation, like that time I crushed you in the row, like something like that, I can do it, but I don't like to do it on a regular basis. And truthfully, like that's where I've always found, like where I get the most tweaks and injuries is from moving too quick without good deliberate form. And then a longer kind of endurance thing, I can be more methodical around what I'm doing. My only caution is you have to mix it up. If you go, all right, I'm just going to go run long runs 4 days a week, then just go be a runner, because you're probably going to have knee problems, ankle problems. Like you're going to start running into all that, or you need to at least do runner's mobility. You follow what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, running is something that, I mean, certainly it can help you build your engine, and doing that pacing work, like especially if you have like a fancy watch like I do, you can see what your pace is as you're running and try to maintain that, whether you're doing it based on your heart rate or based on your pace. You can really manage that and you'll start to see benefits pretty quickly. It's like, wow, the mile repeats that I'm running or the 800 meter repeats that I'm running are becoming more and more bearable because I'm used to holding that pace for a long period of time. It's not like the classic CrossFitter that starts out really fast and then just by the end they're dragging. Right. Which is my typical scenario back when I didn't do hardly any engine training. But if you can vary the pieces of equipment, you're just going to get banged up less. That's like in our engine program, like that's what we do, is we're alternating between rowing, biking, and running, right? We're running once a week. We're biking once a week. We're rowing once a week. And that just allows you to not have any overuse issues and less shin splints, things like that. But it's still, you're building that capacity across different things. And actually something that I talked about recently with someone is there are some amazing like ultra marathoners where they actually bike way more than they run, because once you have that running capacity to just purely build your engine, a bike is a great low impact way to build it, get the heart rate up for an extended period of time, get your miles in, but you're not just beating the crap out of your feet, right, and your knees.
Yeah. Swimming too, if you like.
Absolutely.
To swim.
Swimming. As long as you don't, swimming for me immediately is zone five. Just panic, trying not to drown.
Dude, this is a true story. I tried to swim a couple years ago. I was like, all right, I'm getting older. I need some low impact. I'm going to go swim, start swimming. Go buy all the stuff. No, I didn't get Speedo, so I'm just going to wear trunks.
That's what you're missing, dude.
Probably, but you know,
shaved your legs?
No, but I had the goggles, and I'm like, I'm going to go down. We got an Olympic-sized pool here in my community. I'm going to go swim. So I get out there, and it is full, and I mean full of old people. It's like old people soup, and I know I'm old, but they're way older than me. And I get in the pool, and this little old lady, I mean, she had to be in her 80s, just comes blowing past me in the water. Like, yep. I am dog paddling. I'm like, I am done. My ego cannot handle this. She crushed me, like absolutely crushed me. I'm like, this sucks. I don't want to take the time to learn this.
Yep.
So that was the last time I swam. I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah. Swimming, just like a lot of these things, there is skill involved. There's technique. And unless you practice the time to learn the technique, swimming is one where you just go out and swim a bunch. You're probably just reinforcing terrible technique all over and over and over. So that, I don't do much swimming, and it's a goal of mine. At some point I will take time to properly learn how to swim so that I'm less embarrassing in the pool. But for now I won't.
Yeah. Me either. All right. Next tip. What's your second tip?
Oh man. Well, actually, that would be my second tip, is the technique aspect. Most people, when they view something like ring muscle ups and handstand walks and stuff like that, they're like, oh, there's got to be some technique to make this work for me. But when they're running, when they're rowing, when they're biking, when they're when they're swimming, they're like, oh, you just do it, right? Wrong. Learning the technique of running, learning where to have the weight on your feet, where to have your torso positioned as you run, the technique of how to set up the bike properly so that you're using the right muscles and not just completely blowing up your quads, the technique on how to ski erg properly, which I hardly know. It's really important to focus on the technique as well, because having good technique, just like with all these gymnastic movements and barbell movements, proper technique on these monostructural movements will help you get all of the energy out of it that you put into it. If you have inefficient rowing form, or if you're a very inefficient runner, which admittedly, like, I'm a pretty inefficient runner, I probably work twice as hard to run a mile than Katie does as an ultra marathoner, or a lot of people who know how to actually run. I'm probably doing twice as much work and not getting as much benefit out of it. So spending the time to actually learn the technique for each implement you're using and really be a student of it will help you build that engine, because you're going to be getting the effort that you put in, you'll get the rewards out of it.
Yeah. I'm always amused when our thoughts are similar. I'm a huge proponent of having a run coach, huge proponent. My second topic or second tip was you need to sprint some. So track work's important. Mm-hmm. And it was my run coach that taught me that. Like, it was kind of the same thing you were describing with the rower, where you go out and do intervals. I think people often think of running, like, I don't need a coach for this. Just put my shoes on and go.
Right.
You know? And this guy would get us out on the track, and we do 200, 400, 600 with specific amount of rest in between. And he'd be videoing us doing pose running. And we'd literally run with a metronome. Like, we'd put in headphones, and we had this metronome app. So no music. It's literally just a click.
Yep. And help you get to the zone with the right pace.
Oh, man. You want to, like, really have your mind numbed, run with the metronome.
No,
like, but it's brilliant for a couple of reasons, because it does teach you pacing. And that's one of the hardest things for people to learn early on. And once you get really good at it, you can almost do it without a watch.
Right.
And then over time, I figured out where my pace was, and then I could find songs in that same time signature or beats per minute. And I would program those into my run track. And when I'd go run, I'd run at that pace and just listen to the music and just run on the beat. But I do think that track work is super important, or the interval work that you were describing. So it doesn't just have to be on the track. I know it sounds like I was hating on running earlier, but I really wasn't. I think you just have to be constantly varied, and that's where the interval work comes in. So it's kind of the balance of, you know, I'm going to put in 30 to 40 minutes, but it's okay to say it's going to be in 2 minute increments with a minute in between each one.
Yeah.
Still get your total time. It helps your body understand the duress it's going to be through for that long period of time, and build that engine you're going to need to sustain it. And what I found from doing that, like, he had me doing this interval work for, if I'm remembering right, 4 months. We were training for a half marathon, or for a marathon, but it was a relay. And I was going to run the 7.5 mile leg. Now, I had never run farther than 3 miles in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And during that 4 months, he never had me run farther than 3 miles, not even one time. We did interval training. So literally, I show up on game day and I look at him, I'm like, bro, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I've never run
that distance before.
Yeah. He's like, you'll be fine. And I literally did negative splits all the way through the final mile. My final mile was like 7 minutes and 15 seconds or something.
That's awesome.
My first mile was like 8:30.
Yeah.
And I was just getting progressively faster as I went.
Yeah.
And I felt great. And I couldn't believe it. Like, it was done. I'm like, dude, are you magic? Like, how did you figure this out? And he's like, we just built capacity over time through doing the interval work.
And I know I've mentioned it a few times, but like, again, if we look at the longest runners in the world, they can go run 200 plus miles unbroken. They're not doing that during training, right? They're doing smaller increments consistently and varying their pace. And that helps build that capacity for those very, very long efforts on game day. You don't always have to go full send, full game day every day.
I'm not running 7 minute miles now, by the way, not even close. When we did Murph back in the spring, I did a 7:30 on the first mile, and I nearly died.
Yeah.
Nearly died.
That's tough, especially with that. Was it weighted? Did you have your vest on?
God, no.
No. Okay.
No. I wanted to test my run. Like, I'd been working on running and I was getting better, and I'm like, all right, and our mile at Chagrin Falls CrossFit, the half mile is downhill and the half mile back is uphill.
Oh.
And Tom was at the bottom of the hill, and I took off. I'm leading the pack, obviously, because I'm running way too fast. And I get to the bottom of the hill and I high five Tom, and I look at my watch and it literally says 3 minutes, 15 seconds. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, cause I've run enough to know I was screwed at that point. I'm like, yeah. I am so screwed. And so I significantly slowed down coming back up the hill, and that was all she wrote. It was not a good rest of the workout.
And I think that's what tip number three, we're going to continue this, is understand pacing, which kind of it is similar to what I mentioned for tip number one. But when you actually start practicing with a specific pace in mind, and it's not, as CrossFitters, we have a tendency, especially more beginner CrossFitters, it's like, I'm going to put in 100% effort, and then your body eventually will throttle that naturally because you can't put in any more effort and you crash and burn, especially if the workout has any duration to it. But if you watch the best CrossFitters that have ever done it, Froning, Brazier, Tia Tomei, they were masters at pacing perfectly so that the beginning of their workout looked exactly like the end of the workout, or they actually would go faster at the end of the workout. They had those negative splits you were talking about, which means each round gets a little bit faster. And that's something that with engine work, when you actually start training with a pace in mind, whether that's on the rower, skier, bike, or actually running and tracking with your watch, you start to get familiar with those pacing strategies. And then it actually really does carry over to CrossFit very well, because you understand, well, this pace, I can hold this for 15 minutes. And if the workout's 30 minutes, you know that your pace is probably far too fast. So you learn how to throttle that pace in relation to the workout that you're doing. And the people who get the best scores in CrossFit, whether it's as a scaled athlete all the way up to the elitist of the elite CrossFit, it's the people who are able to manage their pace properly so that they never fall off in the middle of a workout, ideally. They're able to maintain that pace and then even speed up towards the end. Those are the That's the key. We saw this actually at the CrossFit Games. If you watched Helena, that workout, there were several athletes and a few of them were like more games beginners where they did that first round. You're like, wow, they're going to win. Look at them crushing everyone in their heat. They're absolutely destroying everybody. And then by the end, two more rounds, they followed off because they just ran way too fast. They came out way too hot. But it's the people who are consistent, they ended up doing negative splits and they were the ones that had the best score in the workout.
So once again, Ben, we're of the same mind. I went at it from a little different tack. I said measure and track your heart rate, which for me is basically the same thing. So I wear the stupid Apple Ultra and it'll actually tell you what zone you're in. Like literally say zone 2, zone 3, zone 4, whatever. And you can actually tell it, you can customize your zones based on your age. So you can actually, it comes preloaded, but you can change it to whatever you want it to be. So for me, I use that. I wear the watch religiously in my workouts and measure my heart rate to determine, to your point, if my pacing is good. Because like if you're doing a running workout, like I know what those paces should be. I know what my PR mile time is. So I know I should be running 8.5 minute miles in a workout and not blow my heart rate up and I'll be fine or whatever your pace is. But when you're in a workout that doesn't have running and it's barbell and pull-ups and air squats or the things that really blow you up in a wad are wall balls, double unders, thrusters, like compound movements. For me, I use my heart rate to determine where I should be taking breaks. So if I can keep my heart rate somewhere between 135 and 150, I can keep working. Once I cross 150, the breaks come far more frequently. And that's the secret is like of determining when you're going to take breaks. For me, it's always that heart rate. If I can keep my heart rate down, I can work longer, work harder, continue to move, continue to score points or reps or however you're viewing it in a workout. But once I cross that range, then it's like, all right, you got to take some breaks and let it come back down into a kind of a workable zone. Mm-hmm. And then there is that red line zone that you're looking for too. Like you're always trying to, in CrossFit, always trying to push that heart rate right to the edge, but not so far that you can't work. And that's a different number for everyone. And that's the point of why you have to measure and track and really look at it workout over workout over workout to understand where is that point for you. Because for me, like I said, it's like 150 is about right at that edge for me. For you, it could be 170. You're younger, fitter, questionable. But you're younger, fitter, so your heart rate's different. And it would be different for women younger and older and men and teens.
Training history,
and,
yep.
Yeah. All of that, athletes, like if you're like your girlfriend, Ben wasn't just flexing, by the way, that he has a girlfriend when he mentioned she's an athlete. Like you're
still flexing.
Your girlfriend, well, you're still flexing, but she's a world-class athlete, right? World-class. And I would venture very smartly educated guess that her heart rate's wildly different than my old ass.
Oh, yeah. We did a trail run the other day. It was a recovery run. I'm putting this in air quotes for everyone listening because never have I ever done a recovery run because running tends to make me tight and it's always very hard for me. Anyway, it was like 3.79 miles because I tracked it because I was so proud of myself. But we were talking about heart rates while we were running. And of course, we're holding the conversation the whole time. And I was actually holding a conversation. It didn't feel that bad. But I looked down at my watch and I'm like, I'm at 178 right now for my heart rate. What are you at? She's like, 127. It's right. Like, oh my gosh. So, and that just shows that it is something that you can train, right? If I ran a bunch and I got my technique better and I actually did that longer endurance engine building stuff, eventually you're going to see that I'm going to be able to hold a similar pace, a conversational pace. And rather than being at 178 or whatever I was, I'll probably start getting into the 160s. Yep. And then the 150s. And it's slowly but surely, as you build that engine, it requires your body less effort to go at that speed.
Yeah, it'll allow you to really understand the differences that are going on in your body. I had a similar experience. So I would do Sunday run club at the gym and one of my coaches leads it. And this is like the fittest woman I've ever worked out with. Like she's crazy fit and she's a great runner, like really great runner. And we run slow run club, like it's decent distance. I think we only ran 4 miles that day and we were doing like 10 minute miles. So it's like kind of a lightish jog for her particularly, but really kind of for all of us. And when I got back, I looked at my watch and it said my average heart rate was like 155 or something. I'm like, why was it so high? And she looked at me. She's like, we were talking the whole time. Of course it was. You were gasping for breath because we were literally talking the entire time. Yep. And it hadn't really occurred to me, but that was a learning lesson for me that it does change how you're taking in oxygen during the run, which in turn changes how that oxygen gets to your muscles to help you to pull through this. And so it's why I think it's important to track it and really understand what's going on, is it will help you through so many different workouts over time to really understand what your body's reacting to. Mm-hmm. So look at us, Ben. Look at us.
Hey,
who would have thought?
Look at us.
Who would have thought?
Just who would have thought? Not me.
Of the same. And you, I'd point out, you paid CJ for this. I just gave it to you for free. So, you know, you're the one wasting money out there. So, all right. Well, this is fun, dude. When are you going into the woods? A couple weeks, a week or so?
I go into the woods technically 2 days from now for scouting. So I'll spend 3 or 4 days trying to find where the elk are right now. And I'll come back for a couple of days break to get all geared up. And then August 30th, I'll probably go into the woods indefinitely. So I'll probably gear up for I'll have all my gear with me at the truck, but we'll pack the bags for probably 5 or 6 days and live out there 5 or 6 days until the elk tell us otherwise, right? It's all about finding the elk and tracking them. So we might be doing some day trips. We might be doing 7-day trips. It's not really clear yet. We just have to modify our strategy based on what the elk are showing us and also other hunting pressure and stuff like that. But I am going to be prepared for lots and lots of boots on the ground, walking with a heavy backpack. Lots of that.
I love it. I wish you had like a satellite phone internet connection up there so we could video in the woods. It looked like that Blair Witch Project movie.
We are bringing Starlink to where the trucks are. So we will have an internet connection via Starlink at the trailhead. And then usually at the tops of various peaks, I can get service. So I will be on Instagram. I'm definitely going to be posting stories of these absolutely gorgeous landscapes and hopefully of elk that we see. But there will be intermittent updates. But right. I couldn't live stream the whole thing. That's for sure.
If you can get me a 5-minute video out of there, like an update of what you're doing, we'll share it so the listeners can check it out.
All right. I can try to do that.
Do your best.
If I remember, that's the problem, is as soon as I get in the woods, I pretty much forget everything. And
that's fine.
I don't even know what day it is, what hour it is. It can be rough.
I'll hit CJ up to fill in for at least one episode while you're
in the woods. Or just text me. If you text me eventually when I get service, my phone will blow up and I'll be like, oh, okay. And then I'll maybe film an update for everybody. And you can see here, if anyone's watching this, I got my playoff beard and I have the longest hair that I've ever had, probably in 30 years. And I'm just going to keep it rolling, baby, all season. So I'm going to look like a mountain man. Even if I don't know how to live like one, I'm going to look like one.
Oh, you're going to look rough when you come out. I can't wait to see it. Good stuff. All right. Well, this was fun, man. Appreciate you joining. And for everyone watching, listening, thanks for sticking around with us. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow us on the Kettlebells and Cocktails channel on the YouTube channel so you get frequent updates. And we will see you guys soon.
Good to be back, John.